This episode of Is It Beer Yet? And all the work we do at NeoZazz is made possible by the generosity of our Patreon supporters. Support for NeoZazz through Patreon is what keeps everything we do going online and ad-free. If you'd like to learn more about how to help support all the work we do at NeoZazz.com, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/NeoZazz. Welcome to Is It Beer Yet? I am Matt, and this episode will be all about the beer we have called Trabopoline. Now, I'll give the explanation. I'll just go right into the explanation of the name, because that's a bit of a story, and then we'll talk a little bit about the beer, and then, of course, we'll get to the brewing. So, Trabopoline. This is, or has been brewed for our ongoing Simpsons coverage. We've done a couple specials. We did a best of fives to kind of start things off. Then we did some Treehouse of Horrors episode coverage for Halloween. And now we are covering the Simpsons One-Shot Wonder comics, which are just single issues of comics featuring a specific Simpsons character. So this beer is for our ongoing Simpsons coverage. Originally, I wanted to call it Tartar Control Duff, which was kind of a punchline to a scene in The Simpsons when they visited Duff Brewery.
Hey, Barney, I think you've had enough.
Are you crazy? We still haven't tried Raspberry Duff, Lady Duff, Tartar Control Duff.
I brought this idea up to my two co-hosts for all the Simpsons shows we've done so far, my sister Karen and my friend Derek, and I explained to them what the beer was going to be. I said it was going to be an American wheat beer and a very hoppy one. I was going to use that kind of almost, honestly, bland base of the malt grain or the grain bill and throw a lot of hops into it. So I said it was going to be, my description was a very hoppy American or very hoppy wheat ale is what I told them. Since the term hoppy was used, my sister Karen suggested the name Trabopoline, which is kind of, it's from The Simpsons. And what it is Homer's excitement of seeing the word trampoline, free trampoline, actually, in a newspaper, an unclassified ad.
Oh, my God!
What is it?
Trampoline! Trampoline!
He said what now?
Please, don't bring home any more old crutches!
So there is the origin of the name. So it's based after that scene, and the hoppy description I used inspired Karen to suggest using the word Trabopoline. I was immediately outvoted because Derek liked that as well, and that is where that name comes from, and that is what the name of this beer is. So I kind of hinted a little bit of what the beer style is. It's an American wheat, which is much different from a Hefeweizen or even a something you would call out a straight wheat beer. It is quite clear as opposed to what a normal wheat beer would be. Wheat beers a full wheat beer tends to be a little hazy. This is quite clear. And actually, honestly, really, the base malts are quite bland. It's really good for fruit beers or I think other kind of adjuncts you're going to put in. And in this case, I've used it to kind of make it more of a hop forward beer without having the heaviness of a thicker, richer malt taste to it. So it's kind of a very light malty taste beer with a ton of hops that are going to be thrown in, and we'll see if that works. That's the idea here. I'll go through the grain bill right when we get to the episode. You'll hear how it's very hop heavy, and it all focuses on Amarillo hops, which has so far been very good to a lot of the brews we've done, especially with the citrus characteristics. So that's a style. That's the name. A lot more in the name than the style in there. But now let's get to the brewing. So here is the brewing and, of course, the entire steps all the way to tasting of Trabopoline. It is brew day, and I've already gone through most of the regular things that you've heard on this episode already. Yeast starter's already done, the grains are mixed, and they're starting to mash. So I'll catch you up to where we're at to save time and not repeat things we've done on the show several times before, because we're adding something different to the show in this episode that we're going to talk about in place of all that. So what is brewing today? It is called Trabopoline. It is a wheat beer. The name comes from our Simpsons series that we're doing. Grain bill is
going to be, starts off with 9 pounds of two-row pale malt, which we've done before. Then it's 0.75 pounds of flaked wheat and 0.75 pounds of wheat malt. So that's where the wheat part of the wheat beer comes in. For hops, it has got a ton of hops. If I hadn't mentioned it, which I don't think I have, it's going to be a 5-gallon batch. It is going to be all Amarillo hops, half an ounce at 60 minutes, half an ounce at 30 minutes, half an ounce at 15 minutes, and half an ounce at 5 minutes, which is 2 ounces to start with, then a full ounce of dry hopping for 5 days after the initial fermentation, the krausen kind of builds up and settles. That's when I'll add that. So, let's see, anything else? Oh, yes, using distilled water again and using a additive for the wheat beer. Has the someone smarter than me with much more chemistry knowledge added the gypsum and calcium or whatever is needed for a wheat beer specifically. So it's actually, instead of, it's not the same brand as last time. This time it's called Beer Dust, and I'm giving that a shot. So that catches you up to where we're at now. We are at the mash, and today, for this brew, instead of using Brew in the Bag, I wanted to dig out the old mash tun, which, I don't know if you could hear that. There, that's a better sound. What it is, it's a big 10-gallon plastic cooler, water cooler, with the spout taken out and a ball valve put in. And the ball valve obviously is out the front with a tube on it, and inside it is a mesh tube, about a foot-long mesh tube that's at the bottom that the grains are sitting on. And that is, instead of the lifting the bag up out of the water and letting the wort drip into the boil kettle, this is going to gravity feed through that mesh tube out the ball valve and into the boil kettle. So it's a different way of doing things, a more traditional way, I guess, a more efficient way usually, and haven't done it in a while. Decided I wanted to do it and see what kind of results I get, especially when it comes to the pure alcohol gravity, or the gravity, the alcohol percentage, without adding extra fermentable sugars. This is all going to come from the mash, from the wheat, from the malts. That's the word I was looking for. So we'll give it a shot. I will describe more as we go. Sparging process is a lot more intense than the brew in the bag. Intense is probably the wrong word, but a lot more laborsome. So I will describe that when we get to it. But that's where we're at, and I'm waiting for the mash to finish. Another 20 minutes to go, bringing the strike water up. And that's that. As far as water goes, we're going to have, let's see, where's my water calc sheet? 9.75 gallons altogether after all the loss and everything. That all goes to 5 gallons in a few weeks. So we started off with 3.5 gallons of strike water. We're going to add 6.25 gallons of sparge water by hand. That's going to take a while. I'll describe the process. I won't record the whole process because that'll be boring. So, okay, with that, now it's just a waiting game, and I'll be back when I start doing the step between the sparging, which is actually pulling off the first runnings to make sure all the grain husks and anything that are trapped in that mesh tube are out. And I'll describe that when we get to it, and that will probably be next. Okay, we are at 1 hour into the mash, but the sparge water isn't quite up to temperature. It's got about another 20 degrees to go. It's a lot of water, a lot more than I would usually do. It's 6.25 gallons. Yes, 6.25 gallons. So it's taking a little longer than usual. I think 15 minutes or so will be there. 15 minutes extra in the mash will be fine. This, using a mash tun, which is the cooler that I described. I'll probably put a picture up. There's probably a picture right on Instagram right now as I go during the day. But you've seen these, I'm absolutely sure. It's actually, if you're struggling to figure out what it looks like, picture a sporting event, the Super Bowl primarily. Big orange Gatorade bucket that gets dumped over the winning coach's head. It's exactly what this is, except mine's not orange, it's red. So that's what it is. Very well insulated, so that we put in the sparge water at about 158, put in the grains, I dropped it down to 156. It's probably at lowest going to be 154. Like, it should have only lost 2 degrees, if even that. This thing is really good at holding temperature. So, like I said, another 15 minutes is not going to hurt it. In fact, it may even help it a little bit. And then we'll start drawing off some of the wort and see where we're at for getting our boil kettle together here. Okay, strike water is up to temperature, so I think we are ready to check out the wort here. And we're going to test the mash as well with an iodine test. But first, let's get kind of the first sample off here. So I'm opening the ball valve. I'll describe what I have here. I have my boil kettle, but inside my kettle I have two measuring cups, a regular old pretty standard 2-cup one, and then a big 8-cup one. Mainly I have the 8-cup up here for when we get to the strike water, which we'll be doing here shortly enough. But right now I'm just going to collect some into these measuring cups so that if there's any grains, little hulls or anything from the grains stuck in the I'm watching this drain as we go. The mesh pipe tubing that's inside there, it'll get out, because we don't want to boil the holes, because that'll put in some off flavors. So I'm going to take about a cup and a half first here, then I'm going to move the drain line over into the other measuring cup, take a look. We'll probably do this like 2 or 3 times, and then we should be good to do a iodine test and then start our sparge. So I got a cup and a half here. Take a look. I do see little particulates floating there. So we definitely have some whole husks or something. So I'm going to very gently pour this back into the mash tun along the side so it doesn't disturb the grain bed. What we're doing here is letting the grain bed sort of compact around that mesh tube I was talking about and kind of build a wall around it. That way everything that can slip out had already slipped out by the time we get to sparging, and the grain bed will be after letting these first, we'll probably get about quart and a half of liquid out of this. Once that quart and a half is run through the paths through the grain bed to get the sparge water flowing and get all the sugars and everything out of this wort and the most efficient path possible, I guess you'd say, will be built. So different than boil in the bag. Definitely, conceptually the same, but the method is a lot different. So I am trying to pour the big measuring cup over now, and I can't quite get it on the side, so I'm very slowly pouring it on the top so the splashing doesn't get down to the grain bed. So let's take a look here. Yeah, once you with this bigger one, it's a little hard to see the particulates, so I kind of let it pour and it kind of collects into I'm going to call it the corner, even though it's round, it's not a real corner, and I can see there's still particulates, so definitely have to do this like 2-3 more times like I thought. Alright. Oh, the other one, the 2-cup is just about full, so I just turned that over just in time. So let's see how that looks. See, actually, that's been sitting there. Yep, there's a real big piece in there, so definitely still draining out. I'm going to go ahead and do this a couple more times without recording the process, because I think you get the idea. Now, I'll come back to when we're actually done, describe what it looks like, and do the iodine test. So I'll be right back with that. Okay, I'm at about I lost count, but I think it's 5th because of the order I went in. Actually, you know what? I take it back. It's probably the 6th because I had the big one again. So I'm at the 6th running of this initial wort, and it is all those particulates are gone. Did want to mention, you're not going for clear because you're dealing with all grain on these first runnings until you get to the boil and you add clarifiers, you're going to have a haziness. So I made that mistake the first time I used this, thinking I was aiming for a clear draw. You're not. You're going for like pieces you can see, you can identify, you can almost count, like they're that big. Solids, I guess, in a sense. Not a haze, a solid. So we're at that point now. I drew just a little bit more in that last measuring cup to do an iodine test, which we'll do actually right now. I'll probably edit this a little bit because there'll be some silence, but you won't know that because it'll have been edited. So I have a little white... I have this bag of 200 tiny white solo cups. What ounces are they? They even say 3 ounces. I don't know why we have them. They've been sitting around forever. But guess what? They're perfect for an iodine test because they're white and they're not translucent. They're, I guess the word's opaque. So you can absolutely see the change in color with the iodine, if there is some, or isn't, in, which is what we're directly looking for. So I put in just a little teeny bit of the wort, put in the iodine now, nothing at all. That's good. Yep, I put some more in just to be sure. Nope. No gray, no dark, no nothing. This is good to... Whoop. I don't know if you can hear me. I realize I put the recorder down and stood up. This is good to go. This wort is ready. And the color so far, really, really nice. It is going to be a nice golden color. This is going to be, I think, in the end, a really nice summer ale. So I'm pouring what's left in the measuring cups in. Okay. So I'm going to put these measuring cups aside. We're going to need them shortly. I'm actually going to take a moment to get two hands set up here for the sparging, which I will come back and walk you through next. Okay, I am just about set up and ready to start sparging. I'm just waiting for the first runnings of the wort from the mash tun to get low enough that I can put my colander on top of it, so where the colander fits in. So here's what we're doing. So as the wort drains out of the mash tun, I am going to be pouring some water that I got at the temperature of the sparge water, the 170 degree water, through a colander, because the colander will disperse it evenly over the grain bed. This would be much easier with a hot liquor tank, but I don't own a separate hot liquor tank. My mash tun is my hot liquor tank for brewing the bag, and it's my mash tun for this type of brewing. So, until I have that, I have to do this by hand. Now, when you do a 5-gallon batch, it's a lot more than a 2.5 or 3-gallon batch, so it's going to be a lot of hand dipping into this water and pouring it over. That's why I got the big 8-cup measuring cup, or measuring bowl, I guess, at that size, because it's going to take a while, and I want to try to keep the rate of the amount of water I'm putting in that's coming out at the same time. It's not going to be perfect. Again, hot liquor tank would make that more achievable, but I'll do my best. So this will probably motivate me to get a separate hot liquor tank if I continue to do the mash tun. But I don't know yet. We're going to wait and see what the results are. So that's what the setup is. I'll come back with a little bit of the sparging, but you won't want to hear that whole thing because that's going to take a while. One thing I did want to do along the way this time was take gravity readings as we go until I get to, you know, somewhere where it's almost an even one, because that means it's just water coming through the grain bed. So right now I'm going to do my first gravity reading. This is going to be probably the highest throughout the day, because this is like straight out of the grain bed. This is like the, apart from the filtering we did, this is the very first, this is the first wort that hits the boil pot. So I'm going to do the reading right now, quick. Okay, that is high. That is 1.08, so that's got a lot of sugar in it, but that is going to go down as we do the readings. I'll do it probably about halfway through, maybe a third of the way through the sparge water, then two-thirds, and then, of course, towards the end to see if we're getting near that one, just 1.0, which is going to be, of course, basically just water. Okay, I'll walk you through this particular sparge real quick. I just dunked in the big 8-cup, or I say now 2-quart measuring cup. I got about 5 cups of water, which is heavy. My right shoulder is going to be twice the size of my left by the time we're done today. And now I'm just pouring it around the colander. There's like about a 2-inch, the top 2 inches of it are solid. So I'm pouring it around there so it slides down through all the holes in the colander and just spreads nicely above the grain bed. The water is about, I'd say about 5-6 inches above the grain bed. I can't quite see inside there, obviously, through the water. And if I pour and it starts to pull on the bottom of the colander, that means the water is caught up to the bottom of the colander, and I slow down and stop for a second and go back to it, because that's where I had started pouring it. So that way I know I'm at roughly the rate that the wort is flowing out of the mash tun. Again, not exact, but not terribly off. Good enough for home brewing. So that's what I'm doing. I'm about almost this next scoop is probably gonna be a third of the way, the full. Yeah, I'll do another measurement and I'll be back with that, and then I'll just finish out the sparge. We're about a little more than a third away through the sparge, and I pulled out the drain tube and put some directly into the other measuring cup, pulling a sample to do a reading. It's obviously much lighter at this point. It's going to keep getting lighter until it's almost, again, all water. So I'm going to do a reading right now, see what we got. So let me set this down and get my refractometer. If we're down to 1020, so 1.020, which is a big drop from where we started, but we're still that's still a respectable amount of sugar with how much we've collected so far. So we'll probably be okay for the entire sparge. That should get us down just at 1.00 something. So just at that watermark, we shouldn't be draining pure water at the end, or close to the end, maybe, if we are. So looking good so far, and going to go back to sparging. I'll be back with the next reading at the two-thirds the way mark. You don't really need to listen to me sparge. Even I don't want to listen to me sparge, but it's got to be done. Okay, about two-thirds this time of the way through. Took another sample directly in a measuring cup. This one is it's even clearer, but still has a little bit of a golden tinge to it, so it's still got something in there. Let's find out what. That's about 1.012 or 1.3. Hard to tell when it gets that low. So first drop was that 0.60 drop. Now I've only dropped not even 0.010, so it's getting there. It's definitely getting the last bits of sugar out there, but there's still something to get, so I think we're good to finish out this sparge, which I'm going to go ahead and do now. Last of the sparge water, making its way through, probably got about a little less than a half a gallon before it hits the grain bed. I took a drawing, it's clearer, but there's still a tinge of golden tint to it, so there's something in here. I'm going to give it one last measurement and see where we're at. That's at about a 1.004, so not quite water, but, I mean, it's obviously not the 1.80 we started with, but still viable sugars in there, fermentable sugars. So I'm going to let this finish out once the draining stops and put it right on the burner and get to the boil. All right, we're at the boil. This has actually been boiling for about 5, maybe coming up to 10 minutes. I think it was in the last episode, the Redemption Red, I explained I no longer scoop off the hot break proteins because the more I learned about what they do, specifically with head retention, which I have had some issues with the head of the beer after the pour just completely disappearing, I've stopped doing that and just let them fall back into the boil. Well, this one, there was a big protein break. It was really big. It actually looked like a loaf of I should have took a picture. I didn't. It looked like a loaf of the top of a loaf of a sourdough bread. That's actually exactly what it looked like. It was mounded. It was coming very close to a boil over. I had two grill mitts on, ready to pull this boil off the heat. Luckily, it never got to that point. But I'm letting the hot break fall back in, or the hot break proteins fall back in, which they just about all are. There's just a little bit left on the top, enough for me to put in the first hop drop, because I didn't want to do that and really cause a boil over. So I'm going to drop this in and start the 1 hour timer. So here we go. Boil is officially underway. We are just about 25 minutes into the boil, and I'm about to, once we hit the 30-minute mark, I'm going to put in the second hop addition. I'm sure I listed the hops in the grain bill. It's all Amarillo hops. It's going to be 5 additions altogether, 4 in a boil, 1 dry hop, all Amarillo. I think this is kind of taking the place of where I wanted the Palisades hops to kind of be featured in every New Year's Brew. If you've listened back to probably the first episode, maybe mentioned again in the fourth or fifth, somewhere around there. Definitely the first episode. I was really trying to incorporate Palisades hops in everything, but that just didn't work out. Amarillo is turning into my go-to hop. Giving it a smell now. Very, very sweet. touch of floral, but the big thing it brings to it is the citrus addition. And it all depends on where you put it in and what you're matching it with the malts, whether how strong the citrus is going to be. But the citrus addition to this is more on the orange side, kind of the tartar orange side. Tart. I don't know, it's tart because I say tartar and I think tartar sauce, and that's not what I mean. I think tartar is right. T-A-R-T-E-R. Either way, a more of a tart flavor, I should say, than the sweet orange. If I wanted sweet orange, I would just put in sweet orange peel. But for the natural addition, or doing it through the hops, I should say, I guess, I like the orange way better than a grapefruit. Grapefruit is kind of easy to get out of some of the bigger hops. Particularly Citra, that's what really I've noticed, at least in the combinations I've made. It brings out the grapefruit. I'm not a fan of grapefruit. Do like orange, sweet and tart orange. So I think Amarillo is starting to be a go-to for news as brews. And in this case, it is all Amarillo. So this is going to be, if everything works out, a very crisp, slightly tart, with that little bit of citrus orange flavor in the end. So that's why it's Amarillo all the way through, including the 5-day dry hop, which is really going to add the taste to it and probably even get a little bit of earthiness, especially on the first few drafts of it. So that's all I really wanted to say, because I didn't really talk about the hops too much and why it's just Amarillo this time, as we're going to see what it does to this. It didn't really wind out the clock to 30 minutes, but I'll go ahead and stop this particular recording and just come back with whatever I do next rather than make you wait listening to me ramble, which you've already done for apparently the past 2.5 minutes, judging by this recording. All right, the second hop addition is just added at the 30-minute mark, another 1/2 ounce of Amarillo. And now we just wait for the 15-minute mark, where we add a third addition of a 1/2 ounce of Amarillo, the Wolflock tablet, that's the clarifier, and the yeast nutrients, and then one final one, hop addition, I should say, at 5 minutes, and then, of course, the cooling and racking the fermenter and the adding the yeast, but we'll get to that, of course, soon enough in this episode. I did want to actually stop and note that I am drinking a homebrew. As I said many episodes ago, I've not had brews overlap, mainly because of one being a complete failure that I poured down the drain. I kind of had a lack of beers on hand. Finally back up to where I have beer in the kegerator while I'm brewing, and I'm able to pour one, and it's a Redemption Red. And if you've heard that episode, you know I was actually very happy with the results. It's been a week later since the last tasting or recording, the last studio recording for sure. Probably even longer since the tasting. In fact, it has been. But it's been a week since that recording, the studio recording, which I mentioned I liked it. I like it even more. It's aging very well. I do have a slight fear that it is going to age itself out. It's going to get sour after it gets better. I think it's going to hit a kind of an apex where it's absolutely the best it's been its entire run, and then I think it's going to turn bad after that. Like, not, I don't think it's going to go bad, spoiled or anything, like any kind of danger or drink. I just think the taste is going to go a little too far. I think what yeast are left in there, as very inactive as they are still doing something, and I think it's going to turn it to the sour side. With any luck, I won't get to that point. It'll be out by then, but it is a lot of beer. It's an off-season. No one's visiting. No one's going to visit for, what is it, June, July, August, September, October, 4 months. I don't think anyone's going to help me finish off this beer, so I think I will find out if this is going to kind of not go bad in a sense that it's something's wrong with it, just a taste I don't like. So I will probably mention that if that happens, because I'll most likely be brewing something for Halloween by the time that happens. So did want to mention that, but right now it is excellent, and I expect it to get a little better before it gets worse. So very happy with this one. I will definitely be making it again. Going to line it up so that other people can try it as well in the future. So that is that report, and now I'm just waiting for that the next addition to this boil. Okay, did the big addition of the third hop addition, which is, as I said earlier, 1/2 ounce of Amarillo hops, put in the Warflick tablet, and put in the yeast nutrient slurry, I guess you'd call it. It's a W yeast brand. It's a powder. You're supposed to mix it up with a little bit of warm water, which I do, about 1 ounce to 1/2 teaspoon. Give it a good stir and then dump it in, and then let the boil just sanitize whatever was in that water. I usually use tap water. I was microwaving it, but that got a little too I don't know what the word is. That was a little too extreme for an ounce of water to microwave it too warm. I think an ounce of warm tap water enough to kind of mix up that yeast nutrients and into a, at this point, which is like 7 to 6.5 gallons of boiling wort. I don't think it's going to make that big of a taste difference. So that's where we're at. So just waiting out the next, few minutes, put in the last hop addition, let it keep boiling for 5 minutes, and then on to the cooling, which is probably the most constant moving work, but still doesn't take all that long. We'll talk about that next. All right, the boil is done. I'm at the cooling phase. Let me take a temperature. I've been at it for a good 5 minutes. It's at 137. I want to get it down to at least 75. This is by far the most labor-intensive part. I just have to sit here and stir it. Went through one bag of ice. Looks like I'm about ready to put another one in. This will be done in another 10, 15 minutes. Are there better ways? Absolutely. Is there a more economical way in Florida? Well, it depends how you look at it. In the long run, yes, because whatever ice I buy would be better invested into a cooling mechanism, but I haven't done that yet. I am looking at a Therminator by Blickman Engineering with a water pump to pump ice water through. That's probably the device I'll end up going with. It's small, it's quick, easy to clean, and yeah, that's probably where I'll go. But right now, it's an ice water bath. I mean, it's getting up to 90 degrees. It's about 12:30. Yeah, no, it's 1 o'clock. I'm sorry. 1 o'clock, definitely probably close to 90 degrees. I mean, it's end of June, coming up in July in Orlando, Central Florida. It's going to be hot. Ice bath is about all I can do without spending a ton of money on a new device quite yet. I will eventually, but right now, this works. Gets it down the temperature in 20 minutes. It served me well. Would I like to do something less labor intensive? Absolutely. But right now, it gets the job done. So until I'm tired of putting all that labor into it, that's probably what I'll do. So I'll be back probably after I've cooled this down and racked it into the fermenter. Okay, wort is just about cooled, but before I forget or do anything else or add the yeast, I wanted to get my starting gravity. I want to make sure I get an accurate gravity reading on this, especially since I'm gone from brewing a bag to using the mash tun again, and kind of plan on doing that in a few other brews as well. I want to make sure I get everything correct here, including the alcohol content, which starts off with the starting gravity reading. So now that all the wort is in here, it's been boiled. We have our numbers from before, but that was just to measure out how much sugars we were getting out of the malts towards the end of the sparge. Now this is our starting gravity before fermentation. So let's see what number we got. Okay, our overall starting gravity is 1040. So that is what we're starting with, and we'll see what we got at the end of fermentation in a few weeks, but we got a couple other things to do before we get there, and I'm going to start those now. The wort is now in the fermenter. Looks like I got a good 6.5 gallons. I was kind of going for 6-ish, so a little more than I needed, but better more than less. So by the time I rack this into a secondary and then get it into the keg, it should be a clean 5 gallons, so that's good. So I went ahead and oxygenated it. I kind of usually do about 30 seconds. I did a full minute this time because the oxygen stone just was not reaching the bottom. It was reaching about halfway. Sometimes I could get about 2/3 down. So I left the oxygen on for an extra 30 seconds to make sure there's enough oxygen for the yeast to be healthy and happy and make alcohol, which is the point. So I'm ready to pitch the yeast now. So I'm going to drain off the dry malt extract, which all the sugars have basically probably been turned to some kind of alcohol, a non-hopped beer in a sense. I'm not going to taste it. I will one day, but not today. And then I'm going to leave just enough to break up this yeast cake and pitch the yeast. So I'm going to do that, probably a little bit of an edit right here as I do that, and then I'm going to pitch the yeast right into the fermenter. All right, I got about 400 milliliters of the the non-hop beer and the yeast. That's a little more than I want to dump in, but the yeast is already starting to pour out The Edelmeyer, I think that's how you say it, Edelmeyer flask, as I was dumping off the decanting the yeast. So I don't want to lose the yeast. I think I have just enough yeast. It was a little bit of a tough go on the yeast starter, so I don't want to lose the yeast. So I'm going to go ahead, put a little more liquid in than I like to. But again, with, well, 6 gallons, more than 5 gallons, with 5 gallons of drinkable beer and 6 gallons fermenting, should be okay. So I'm going to go ahead and pitch the yeast right now. All right, the yeast is pitched. I kind of ended up pouring it right down the middle of the fermenter. I didn't want to do that. I'd like to kind of pour it around, but I needed 2 magnets to hold on to the mixer bar from the yeast starter. So what I'm doing now is I'm kind of shifting around. You can probably hear it. Shifting around the fermenter to kind of spread that yeast out. Looks like it did a pretty good job, actually. It's pretty cloudy in the top third of this, so it's definitely spread out now better. So I'm going to go ahead, lid this, put on my Fermonster. The temperature range for this is, I think, 58 to 74. Definitely not going for the 58, but I'm going to drop it down like 70, maybe 68. I think I did 68 last time, my last one, and it worked out well. So I'm going to try that. Maybe 67. Get it down to the lower end. And then just wait. It's a waiting game after that, but I'll be back just a bit once I get the brew jacket set up. All right, the brew jacket is all set. I scared the heck out of myself at one point. When I turned it on, it said it was 90 degrees. I was like, if this wort is 90 degrees, I just killed all the yeast. It started to drop dramatically after that, so that must be the temperature it was sitting where it was sitting. It's inside. It's about 76 inside, but it was sitting by the window. So that post on the brew jacket is may have been 90 degrees max. Or actually, I take it back. Not even that. The sensor. I just realized it's not the post. It's the sensor. So the sensor, which is even a smaller surface area, that very well may have been 90 degrees. It is still dropping. So thankfully, I didn't kill off the yeast. I did set it for 67 degrees. That's where we're going to hold it out for the first 2 weeks. Then I'm going to rack it into another fermenter and then ferment it again at 67 degrees for another week. And then we're going to keg it. We're going to do the gelatin clarifier to drop out the bigger particles. I did not use the clarifirm this time, because this is a wheat beer, there will be some haze. So I know the gelatin is good at picking up the big particulates, particularly the dry hops. Once we add that, oh, we gotta add the dry hops too, of course. So I'm gonna stick with the gelatin for this one. When I do an ale again, or maybe a lager, probably an ale, most likely do an ale next, I'm gonna try the Clarity Firm. But for now, it's on its way. Just gotta wait it out. It will be beer soon. This is a supplemental recording to the Trabopoline beer. I finished brewing. It's the same day. I've cleaned everything up. I've taken a shower. I'm going to get some lunch. I am absolutely starving. But it's only 3 o'clock, and having all that done, that might be the fastest I've ever done a full brew like that. I know the Miscalculated Blonde was kind of a sprint, and so I don't know. It's probably tied between the two. But anyway, my point is, I'm going to look for a beer. Funky Buddha Brewery from Florida. It's weird. They're not my favorite Florida brewery, but they have made some of my favorite beers. For me, they're very hit and miss. And they do some really crazy experimental stuff. And sometimes with me, it's a hit. Sometimes it's a miss. Moro. If you've ever heard me and Dave from Stars and Characters Best of 5 Summer Beers, I declared Moro not only my favorite summer beer, but my favorite beer of all time, and I still stand by that. That is my absolute favorite beer. They have one called Pineapple Beach, which is one of my favorite beers. On the other side, on the other end, they've made a French Toast beer, which I didn't care for, and they made a Blueberry Cobbler beer, which I really didn't care for. So that's why they're not my favorite brewery, but they've made some of my favorite beers. It's very weird. Anyway, point is, they just released a beer called I'm So Excited, I'm So Scared. I'm not going to say I don't usually buy beers based on the name I have before, but this one I'm buying strictly on the name. I have no idea what kind of beer it is, but it's a reference to a old Saved by the Bell episode involving a caffeine pill addiction. It's a very obscure, ridiculous reference, and the fact that they named a beer after that, I have to find it. I don't care what it is. It could be a absinthe, licorice, and lemongrass beer. I'm still going to try it because of that name. I know Total Wine will have it. That's not where I'm headed first. That might be my next trip later this weekend. If you have a Total Wine in your area, you know why I'm saying that. If you have a BevMo, same type of deal. So you even know why they would most likely have it. The place that is second most likely to have it is on my way to where I'm picking up some lunch. And it's a little bit of a hole-in-the-wall local liquor store, but it's a very good liquor store. Very good selection, and in particular, their beer. The guy that runs this store, extremely knowledgeable in beer, pulls in a lot of unique things and a lot of good local stuff. There's a lot of local stuff here, more and more every year. Not all that good. Not all of it's good. This guy brings the good stuff. So if the closest place that could possibly have it is going to be this place. So I'm trying there first on my way to lunch. If they have it, great. If they don't, I'll go to Total Wine later. But I got high hopes that they're going to have it. They carry a lot of funky Buddha stuff, including the Moro Moro that I rave about every year. They'll likely have this. If they were able to order some, they'll have it. So I'm about to find out. I'll let you know. It's still a little bit of a drive away, but that is where I'm headed first before lunch. All right, well, I didn't find I'm so excited, I'm so scared yet, so a trip to Total Wine is in order. However, I did find two really cool beers that I'm excited to try once I get them cooled down. They were, I think they were just put on the shelf because they're barely cold to the touch. It was just like, they're just under the air temperature. They were in the cold rack, but I think they were just put up there. But anyway, one is called Blood Show. I thought it was Blood Snow. It's Blood Show. It's a lager with blood orange. I've had IPAs with blood orange. I've not had a lager with blood orange. This is by Against the Grain Brewery in Louisville. Oh, wait. Is it Louisville? No. It's by Against the Grain Brewery from Louisville, Kentucky. I don't recall having any of their stuff before, so I'm going to try it. Second one, I could not resist, by Red Cypress Brewery. It is called Spook Hill. If you are a longtime listener of NeoZaz, specifically Stars and Character, you may recall our first Halloween special about the NoBot, where we discussed local legends at the end of the show. My story was about Spook Hill in Lake Wales that I worked next to for 4 years. I drove past that thing every day in, every day out of work, and talked about it on the show. This is pretty cool that there's a beer named Spook Hill, and there was other beers by this brewery with the same type of label that I think were named after Florida legends as well. I have to look that up. If they are, I am going to do a Halloween special on those beers along with the legends. So again, Red Cypress Brewery, have not had anything from them before. Don't know if it's any good. This particular one is a pale ale. It's a 5%er. It is a 35 IBU, so it's going to be a very, not a very bitter one, but it's a pale ale. Really looking forward to that one as well. So that's what I found, and I will head out to Total Wine to try to find the original thing I was looking for, Funky Bruta, which was I'm so excited, I'm so scared. But I did have some cool finds today, and looking forward to trying those. It's about 24 hours since I pitched the yeast in the beer, and I'm looking at the fermentation now, and fermentation is crazy. It is the Krausen. I woke up to this. I didn't record it this morning. Krausen has already completely filled there's at least another gallon and a half in this carboy. It's filled to the top. It's already coming out the blow-off tube. There's been gurgling in this. I'm trying to make it gurgle. The trick of pulling the tube out didn't work on this time, but the gurgling in the blow-off tube into the sanitation. Growler. Growler was going all morning. The brew jacket's having a tough time keeping it below 70 because of all of the fermentation activity, I think. It's creating a little bit of heat, not a lot of heat, not radiant heat, but a little bit of warmth. So it's been below 74, which is, that's good. That's the upper threshold of this particular yeast. So super healthy fermentation. When I pulled down the side of the actual thermal jacket of the brew jacket, this whole system, you can see huge chunks. It looks like that. It looks like something's boiling. I think I've used that description before, but you see chunks of yeast just floating everywhere. It is extremely active. Very cool thing to see. I always enjoy this part of the fermentation process, so I'm going to keep an eye on this. I'd imagine this is going to continue for like another day or two like that, and then once the krausen subsides, I can go ahead and do the dry hop. But the fermentation is definitely healthy. Very healthy, for sure. No doubt about that. So if I hadn't mentioned it, I don't think I did. The yeast I'm using is a W yeast brand. It's the 1010 American wheat yeast for the wheat beer, so should give it a nice, definitely that crisp, dry flavor that we want to layer the those Amarillo orange citrus hops on top of. So we'll see. Definitely got some fermentation. There's definitely alcohol in there now. We'll see how long this goes. I'll check back throughout the next few days, mainly to see when I can put in the dry hops and just to give a report as well. But definitely, I was a little worried. The yeast didn't quite react. I wasn't sure how that yeast starter was going, because it seemed like, I mean, I got a good yeast cake, but I never really got a lot of activity. And only being able to drop the oxygen stone about three quarters down into the wort yesterday, I wasn't sure if I got enough oxygen in there. But it looks like both worries were unfounded, because this is definitely a healthy fermentation. Okay, we are, 6 days into the fermentation, and I just added the dry hops. That is 1 full ounce of Amarillo hops, and the fermentation, the krausen was down, so that looked good. The beer is still cloudy. It's going to be hazy, but this is definitely cloudy, so I think there's still some active fermentation. So a little bit of the gases might push out the aroma of the hops, but otherwise, I think it was a good time to do that. You can probably hear their brew jacket going. It's keeping everything at 67 degrees, give or take a half a degree. So, once again, best device I own in all this. Just waiting game now. I'm going to let it dry hop for 6 days, pull the hop sack out, then day or two after that, I'll rack it into a secondary fermenter, and then that'll be it for the fermentation process and on to kegging. Now, I kind of lost track on what I've recorded and what I haven't, so I'm going to kind of do a recap and may have to edit this when I get to the actual putting the episode together, or maybe I'll just leave this in and I'm explaining why you're hearing things over again. I'm not sure. So, things got a... I got to the dry hopping, which took two of us to come with this brew jacket. I do... It's nothing against the brew jacket. I just was... It's just much easier if it was able to lift out of the fermenter, not touch anything, and then go back in, then we didn't have to re-sanitize it. So two people were involved, my wife and I, put it in the dry hops. 7 days later, took out the dry hops, same method both time with two people working on it. So I didn't stop to record with two of us kind of trying to move as fast as we can. So dry hopping is done. Now it is... was about 3 days after we took out the dry hops, and it's been 2 weeks in the primary fermenter, so I'm about to rack it into the secondary fermenter. So I'm just now sanitizing everything I need for that, which is the secondary fermenter, which now I have moved on to Fermonster bottles. I have a 7 gallon one and a 6 gallon one, or 6.5 gallon one. The smaller one is a secondary, mainly for I had buckets before, which were fine, but I'm just moving on to something. I missed being able to see the fermentation process to see how it was going. So the buckets were white, these are clear, and these are also, the lids are a little easier to clean than the bucket lids. The buckets have these little corners, like pieces, I don't know what you would even call them, little fins almost, that are take a lot of scrubbing. These caps are about 4 or 5 inches across and really easy to. And they're just nothing but the threads in there that are really getting away. So, not sure I ever mentioned what gear I'm using now for fermenting, the 5 gallons, but so I thought I'd share that. So, I'm going to take everything out of the 7 gallon, put it in the 6 gallon, let it ferment with the brew jacket at 67 degrees for another week, and then keg it. In fact,
The Brew Jacket's still running. That's why I haven't actually started yet, because I don't want to turn it off while it's running. I'm sure it'll be fine, but it seems better to pull the power when it's not. So once that's done running, I will dump the sanitizer out of the second fermenter and out of the siphon and siphon this in and get it racked to the secondary fermenter. I have just poured an absolutely stunning glass of Trabopoline. It is absolutely beautiful. I haven't even checked the aroma, certainly haven't tasted it, because I just want to take in how gorgeous this glass of beer looks. If this is what it looks like, if you look up beer on Google, this is the pint glass you see. Golden color, nice creamy white head. It's held for quite a bit. I've moved from room to room to set up and record. I'm actually in the studio, ironically, about to record Simpsons One Shot Show, what this beer is made for. I swirled it around a little bit. The head came right back. It looks beautiful. So let's see how it tastes now. Okay, first thing, I checked out the aroma, and there is a slight, there is a hoppy aroma to it, but not near as much as I thought with the amount of hops that were in it, especially the dry hopping. So not as strong as an aroma as I thought. A little bit of that kind of the yeast esters are coming through with that as well. Yeah, okay. I mean, it smells okay, just not the smell I was expecting, the hoppy smell. Let's give it a taste. Ooh, okay. Where it lacked in hops in the aroma, it makes up for in the taste. This is way hoppier than the aroma gives away that it will be. Let me take another sip now that I'm kind of expecting that. Okay, it's very hop forward, and that's what I expected. It has kind of the, I don't want to say light, not light beer, but the lighter malt taste because of the wheat addition. It's an American wheat. It's not a Hefeweizen. That would be a different taste, but it takes the wheat adjuncts, take a little bit of the maltiness out of it and puts it, the hops forward. And I don't quite understand why I'm not getting a hop aroma, but I'm definitely getting a hop taste. It is not IPA level hop though, but it is a hoppy wheat beer, which is the idea. Yeah, not quite as much as I thought. Now that I got the hops settled twice, let me see what kind of other taste I actually get from it. Just for this, is a longer taste review than usual, but it surprised me on the first one. Second one, I got adjusted. Now let me see what else I can pick out of this. Okay, the mouthfeel, I didn't mention that before, very strong mouthfeel. It doesn't take long at all to hold it in your mouth, and you feel the that almost stinging of the alcohol. So the mouthfeel is good, maybe slightly strong, actually. The taste, the hops are more earthy than citrusy, which I would expect from Amarillo. That's interesting, but there is, you know, I gotta do, this is definitely probably the longest tasting, because this has really got me thinking about this beer, so I'm gonna take another taste. Okay, I did two good swallows as I was drinking to see if that changed a little bit. It takes the earthiness away as I'm drinking it, and definitely gives me more of a straight-up beer taste, which is a very strange description, because it's a beer. Of course, it's going to taste like beer. But what I'm saying is it's like a as I'm drinking it, like a just a beer, like a Pilsner, or maybe even a light lager, where you're not tasting any particular malts or hops. That's what I get as I'm drinking it. It's not until the finish that I'm getting a hoppy taste. This is actually, I'm glad it's this time of year. It's about to be August. I'm recording this on July 27th, 28th, 27th. So it's still going to run me through the summer. Definitely a summer beer. It's a thirst quencher, which I wasn't expecting from a wheat, American or otherwise. But it's got that little bit of hops to make it not a, a crap beer. Not what I was expecting. maybe not what I was intending, but very good. I actually am really liking this beer. I'm going to take another drink just to enjoy it at this point. Yeah, that is good. Yeah, I don't know what to call it because it's not what I expected, but it's not a failure. It has the hoppiness that I thought, and I think maybe in making an American wheat, I had in my head more a Hefeweizen, so that's why the lighter, not heavy taste on the rest of the beer is hitting me. So I'm going to call this pretty much a success, an unexpected success. Let's call it that. I would probably make this again, but I would tell people what to expect a lot different than when I set out to make this. Now, I know in the past I've... On this show, I've set out to do things, and it didn't come out like I wanted, so I called it a failure, even though it was good. This is got elements of what I want and stuff I didn't know that I wanted, so that's why it's an unexpected success. I'm cheating, but it's my show, and I just made up that rule, so I will call this a success. If you're listening and you're following the recipe along, just be aware that this is much more of far more refreshing beer than I expected it to be. This is a great daytime beer. I'm actually looking forward to going into the weekend. Probably won't be brewing, but I'll be outside doing something, and I'm going to slam one of these when I'm done, and I think it is going to just enhance that experience. I am shocked. I'm really surprised. Carbonation on this, though, let me mention that. I don't think I did anything on the carbonation. I don't know what I did different. But I think I finally got the carbonation dialed in. I mean, I do know what I did different. I don't know why the other ones didn't work like this. I didn't record the carbonation, but I did a 30 PSI into the CO2, into the gas line, not the draw line, into the gas line, laid the keg on its side, shook it for 2 minutes nonstop, set the keg back up, and let the gas finish filling. And then after that, I just set it on the kegerator gas for 5 days. I think the kegerator gas, that additional 5 days of just slow pressure and not letting the gas escape in the headspace of the keg is what I needed to do all this time. Difficult to do when you're making beer because you run out of patience and you want to get to it, but that extra 5 days, I think, is exactly the missing link I needed because this carbonation is perfect. The head is still there. The carbonation is coming up from the bottom of the glass like you'd expect, which I had a lot of trouble achieving, so I'm very happy about that as well. So, all in all, from a good brew day all the way to a great final product, this is a very pleasant success. Very pleasant surprise, unexpected success. Trabopoline, that's a good one. This one, if I were to change anything, I don't know that I would. It's not perfect. This is not a beer I want around all the time, but it is a very good summer beer. I think... this I wouldn't touch. I think this is a good crowd pleaser. If we ever do a summer event for the neighborhood, this would be the one I'd bring. It'll satisfy the average beer drinker, and the beer snobs will find some things to actually compliment and pick apart, but that's another story. So, yeah, I think this one I'm going to leave as is.
All right, that is it for the recordings, and I'm just going to follow up to say that that beer seems to be getting better immediately. Usually, these all-grain brews get better within a couple weeks, and then they kind of plateau, and then and they usually don't last much longer than that. A couple have, and they've kind of outlived their peak time. They don't go bad. They don't like smell and taste bad. They just don't taste as strong and rich and as good as they did at their peak. This seems to be peaking quite quickly, and I don't know how long it's going to hold, but on the other hand, it's seemingly not a problem because this beer is going fast. It's quite a crowd pleaser. So I think I can't see me not making this again, but I also don't see me not altering this recipe. I think this recipe, as it stands, I will make again. I also think I'll take this recipe and toy with it a little bit. Maybe throw in just a couple ounces of a caramel malt to give just a little bit of a back body to it, and then play with the hops more, play with some more adjuncts, and maybe even some fruit beers or some specialty beers, like some really off the wall taste to see how the tastes work in it. Like I wanted to try to, this is probably going to gross most people out. It gross most people at Neo's as out the idea, but I'm really curious to do it. I wanted to try to do a candy corn profile, which is a mixture of vanilla and marshmallow. This would be probably the perfect base malt beer. Lighten the hops a little bit and then try to add those vanilla and marshmallow flavors if I'm going to do it naturally. Not saying I'm going to, I'm just saying that's an example. If I wanted to start playing with flavor profiles outside of malt and hops, I think this is the base beer I'm going to do that with. So this was a very good experience as far as the end result and kind of something I have to build the future on. So I can't really say much more other than what the recording did for the tasting and this wrap up, because I'll just be repeating myself over and over again. Very good beer, very successful brew, a little different outcome than I originally targeted for, but cannot complain at all on the results. And I really think this grain bill, this base recipe, I guess you'd say, is going to come handy in the future. A lot of ideas built from this. I'll probably go back to doing 2 and 3 gallon runs just for this taste profile built off this base recipe. So that's it. That is it for this episode. So hope you enjoyed it. Next episode, actually, we're going to start playing with different flavors, but not based after this recipe because I hadn't done it yet. I'm already in the midst of brewing. Actually, it's at fermentation at this point right now as we speak. But that'll be up next. And that was another beer, not in name like this that changed, but an idea change. And I'll explain more why when we get to that. But that'll be in the next episode. Also have a backlog of recordings on local beer reviews, local brewery reviews, both from here and the Philadelphia area from Dave. I just have not got those together. I need to get those together and put those into rotation because I think that's something that anyone is interested in craft beer and beer making are going to enjoy and want to learn more about these local places, especially if you're in the Central Florida or the Philadelphia area or going to visit either. Both are tourist destinations. You may find yourself there and it's good information to share. I just need to get it out there. So I will do that. But I guess until then, I'll say thank you for listening. Follow our social media pages that have corresponding pictures of this, particularly Instagram, where Neo's as on Instagram. I usually post a lot of pictures as I'm brewing and during the entire process, including the first pour out of the keg. I also post information or those pictures as well on our Facebook page, which is Neo's as Podcast on Facebook, and our Twitter account, which is Neo's as. So that's it. Thank you for listening. I will be back with another episode. Be it either the brewing one or the local beer. I have recordings for both. Just need to get them done. Until then, let me say, which I know I've said before, but it's worth saying again because you've taken the time to listen. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in that next episode.